What's going on? Thank you so much for listening to this podcast. It is heard live every day from noon to 3 on WBT Radio in Charlotte. And if you want exclusive content, like invitations to events, the weekly live stream, my daily show prep with all the links, become a patron. Go to thepeakcalendarshow.com. Make sure you hit the subscribe button. Get every episode for free right to your smartphone or tablet. And again, thank you so much for your support.
Halfway through. We're almost there, people. News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT, Pete Callender here. Hour number 3 of my program. But I have another one coming up. I'll be filling in for Brett Winterble at 3. Then Brett Jensen will guide you for the rest of the evening. 704-570-1110, 1-800-WBT-1110. Email is Pete at thepetecallendershow.com. At the end of the last hour, I was talking about Byron Donalds, congressman, potential vice presidential pick. He is a Republican from Florida. He is a black man, and he is part of this outreach effort to get more black voters to vote Republican. And these were comments he made at an event in Philadelphia that led to a lot of pouncing and seizing by Democrats and media. But I repeat myself. He was talking about how the destruction of the black family is attributable to government programs. That was the point of his comment. And he talked about how until the government started doing these programs, which, by the way, yes, existed during the existed after the Jim Crow era, that during the Jim Crow era, the black family was largely intact and was the core unit of cohesiveness for the black community. And once government came along and started doing all of these different programs to help, the black family disintegrated. And he attributes that disintegration to a lot of the problems that are experienced by that demographic population. Brookings Institute has done work on this. A lot of people, a lot of institutions, researchers have done a lot of work on this. And these are the things that are constant. And by the way, it is constant across all demographics, right? The more broken homes there are, the more disintegration of the family unit occurs, the more problems occur. But because he mentioned Jim Crow and he's a Republican, well, that must mean he wants to go back to Jim Crow. And that is not the case. Think about that. He's a black guy living in Florida. Do you think he wants a return to Jim Crow? I mean, let's just not ascribe the most evil, nefarious motive. And let's just try to think, okay, what is the guy saying? Oh, he's saying that the family unit was intact even during and despite the oppression of Jim Crow. Let me go over and get Joe on the program. Hello, Joe. Welcome to the program.
Hello, my friend.
Hey.
I take opposition as an African-American man. I'll soon be 60 and know a little bit more history than what he tried to ascribe to, and I'd like to share that with you. If he wants to choose a time when the black family had its cohesiveness and full era of unity and unit of the family, I would go back to Black Wall Street, a time when
was
John
that?
Brown and John Brown and Frederick Douglass, mm-hmm. after helping Lincoln emancipate slavery, then Black Wall Street began.
Right, so
and
Jim Crow.
The great,
the Jim Crow. Joe, Black Wall Street occurred during the Jim Crow era.
Jim Crow era happened after Black Wall Street.
When's the Jim Crow era?
Jim Crow era happened 1865 up till about, I want to believe it was 1889 or so, but it was a 12-year period, and many cities in North Carolina, Winston-Salem, Durham, Wilmington, had Black Wall Street.
Wait, hang on, Joe. What was this 12-year period you're talking about? Is that Jim Crow era or is that Black Wall Street?
No, that is Black Wall Street.
Okay, so when's the Jim Crow era?
After, because government bombs set upon Tulsa, and I'm sure you've heard of Tulsa, mm-hmm. Oklahoma, and mm-hmm. Black Wall Street. That's what I'm talking about.
I know what you're talking about. I disagree. No, hang on, Joe. I just disagree with you that you're trying to separate the attacks and the terrorism of that occurred at Black Wall Street with, you're trying to separate that from Jim Crow era.
Jim Crow era were laws. When were those laws instituted?
Was anybody ever prosecuted?
No, this is my point.
Was anybody ever prosecuted for any of the abuses that they inflicted upon Black Americans on Black Wall Street? No, right.
Of course not. But right. Study it.
Right. No. See, so, Joe, but that's my point. But Joe, you said there are no laws. But that's my point, is that the selective and vindictive prosecution, what you're describing and what I know to be the case, is in when you do not charge white people for committing those types of abuses against Black people because of their race. That's precisely what Dan Bishop was talking about. Now, I know, and by the way, Joe, I heard your call the other day to Vince's show about this, so I kind of know where you're going with this argument. And I think, look, I have no problem talking about Black Wall Street. I have talked about it. I've talked about the Wilmington riots, which really weren't riots. It was an attack on Black people and fusionists and Republicans in Wilmington and a coup d'etat in America. So I've talked about these. I've talked about these before. So I'm trying to understand why you are so interested in separating out those abuses from Black Wall Street. I agree. Whatever it is that you're going to say about Black Wall Street and the abuse, I would agree with you. Right. So what is the point of trying to bifurcate these two things? Is it to say that Byron Donalds is wrong about the family unit being strong before the Great Society?
And I will tell you why. And I'll tell you why I'm separating them. Because prosperity, the building of businesses in the Black community, mm-hmm. all of that happened during Black Wall Street. It did not happen during Jim Crow.
Well, no, It did happen during Jim Crow, though.
Name them.
Charlotte.
Name businesses,
Brooklyn.
That thrive. Charlotte and Brooklyn are cities. They are not thriving.
No. Charlotte is a city, yes. Brooklyn. Well, wait a minute. Okay, so hang on a second. Brooklyn is a part of Charlotte. And Charlotte had a thriving Black business sector when everything was segregated. But hang on a second. The idea that I don't want to back up here, because you just said, give me some examples. And you keep saying Black Wall Street as like one discrete place in one city. And I'm talking about the larger system of the laws and the era where people were abused and oppressed based on their race. And that is way beyond just Black Wall Street.
During Black Wall Street era, there was no abuse. We were able to thrive.
There was no abuse?
That's correct. We were able to thrive and grow and be as a Black community and as a Black family.
Do you think? Okay, so, all right.
It was only until government and local government, state government began burning down the Black Wall Street district in the many states and instituting Jim Crow that the demise of the Black family, the demise of the Black male, what happened to the many, many Black males in the Republican Party, all of that happened because of the hatred of what thrived from the emancipation of the enslaved here in America.
So you want to say then that there were like two separate historical eras, if you will, these different eras of this economic thriving when there was some level of equality, and then Jim Crow took effect. And I would submit that the codification of the Jim Crow laws, and you notice, like I'm saying Jim Crow set, but it's a Jim Crow era. The laws that got codified were put there because the sentiment allowed the laws to be enacted like that, right? I mean,
and they were called Black Code and Penal
Yes.
Law.
Right. So things that were being enforced that were not by law were still being enforced by the local populations. They didn't necessarily put them on the books at that point. No, they definitely ratcheted them up. No doubt about that. But even as those discrimination laws were being ratcheted up, the members of the Black community, Black people in America, did continue to succeed. I don't agree with your assessment that the family unit started disintegrating at that point, because the evidence is very clear that it tracks back to the 60s with the Great Society. That's when fatherless homes started exploding, particularly in the Black community, right? That's when that stuff started happening, was because now you've incentivized behavior. And again, this is true across all demographics. This is the case now for all demographics, all races.
When the Great Society started, mm-hmm. Black women weren't allowed to receive that funding. That was, welfare was for widows and children.
Well, yeah,
and
widows
and orphans. They weren't for black widows, but they weren't for black people.
No, well, that's not the whole program, though. The Great Society was the Great program? Society isn't that whole program. No, and the Great Society wasn't a single piece of legislation that then stopped. This is the growth of more and more programs. That's the whole point, is that as government does more and more and more and more, because it hasn't stopped, it just keeps expanding, right? And as government keeps doing more, it then essentially it infant less. They rely more and more on the government. And again, this is across the board for all races today. All races today are infantilized by an expansive state. That's the point of what he was making.
Well, I'll leave it at this. There's been more destruction that has come from local and state government than what federal government could ever do for the black family.
Yeah, I don't know if I would agree with that, but I appreciate the discussion. Joe, have a good weekend, sir. I don't know if I agree with that assessment. I'd want to see the data run. And I'm sure data could be run on it. News Talk 1110, 99.3 WBT. 704-570-1110 and 1-800-WBT-1110. The email is pete@thepetecallinershow.com. Got a couple of messages here. Bob says, denial of the pre-Great Society successes seeks to perpetuate the existing administrative state's government trough where many continue to enrich themselves. Follow the money. That could be part of it. I don't want to deny that as a possible motivation, but I think that there are a lot of people that, you know, like anything else, we don't know what we don't know. And you see this play out a lot in the debates over school choice, school reform, education reform, and that's really where the fight has to be had, is K-12 government education, because I've been saying this for years. This is how we transfer our knowledge and our culture to the next generation. And the stuff that, you know, kids have been exposed to for the last few generations in government schools has me very, very worried for what the future is going to look like, because they will grow up and they're not going to abandon these ways of thinking. And the destabilizers in our society are well aware of that. But when it comes to people not knowing what they don't know, it's called the normalcy bias, right? Where this is why people, for example, when they're in a public place and there's a shooting that occurs, and they always say, "Oh, I thought it was fireworks or something at first," right? The brain literally does not register what is occurring because it's not normal. You don't train for those things. When you see stuff happening, like, people wonder, oh, why didn't somebody try to stop that guy from, you know, murdering someone on a subway car? There's like 100 people around and nobody stopped them. And yes, part of it might be, oh, I'm afraid I might get prosecuted by Alvin Bragg, like the fella who stepped in to take down a violent person on a subway car. Now he's charged by Alvin Bragg. So there may be some of that, but a lot of it is normalcy bias. You just don't understand what it is that you're seeing at first, unless, again, you are trained and you recognize this for what it is as it's happening. And I think there is a lot of that at play, where it's sort of a status quo idea of, you know, I understand all of the stuff that is as it is now, and I cannot fathom what it would be like if it were anything else. And there is an assumption that the way it is now is the perfected version of whatever it is, and it exists because what existed prior was bad. And that's not necessarily true. And here's a good example of it. The direct election of U.S. senators in America. People can't even fathom the idea, and most people aren't even aware that U.S. senators have not always been popularly elected. Used to be, they were appointed by the state legislatures. That was the original design of the program until the 1920s with the progressive movement. And why was that the case? Well, you have the people's house, where the people are represented, and then you have the Senate, where the states are represented. And that was the check and balance on an expansive federal government. So to me, no, it's not a surprise that once you unwind that protection, that the federal government is then going to begin encroaching on all sorts of other areas that used to be under the purview of the states, right? Those enumerated powers in the Constitution that say this is what the federal government is supposed to do. It's why the states signed on to the compact in the first place, was that their rights were protected. Their authority, their power was protected from encroachment by the federal government. Now, I'm not talking about like, well, states' rights, Civil War, you know, Jim Crow laws, like all of this stuff. I'm talking about setting up the structure, the infrastructure that was built, right? And why that infrastructure was built that way. And people just think now, well, we have U.S. senators and they're elected. And why does California, with all of its millions of people, have two senators? And, you know, teensy-weensy little Wyoming, they have the same number of senators. And that's not fair. Well, it's not fair because of the way you're thinking of it and the change that was brought about by progressives 100 years ago. Right. Yes, it doesn't make sense that everybody gets two. It does make sense if the states get two, because the senators were there to look out for the states' interests, to make sure that the federal government didn't encroach on responsibilities and powers of the states. So if a U.S. senator sold out their state legislature for something, then the state legislature could just come along and be like, you're out. Give them the hook, you're out. We're going to send somebody up there that's going to represent the state's interests. They appointed them. That was the original design, right? But people can't think about that. They can't even fathom that we would ever go back to that. We can't go back to that. And of course, nobody would ever vote, not nobody, but not enough people would ever vote to give up their vote for U.S. senators. No, I've got this power now, right? But you fundamentally altered the relationship between the states and the federal government. And that, of course, was the point, just like the income tax, right? We had the income tax applied during the same progressive era, and that's never going away. But that wasn't the way it used to work. It was different. People just a lot of times think that the way things are now are the way things always were. And if they weren't, well, they're better now. That's why these systems got created. Nah, K-12 education system, right? That was built up around what? The Prussian model that was modeled after what they had done in Prussia. And what exactly was the purpose of the government-run factory model of education? Because that's what it is. Right? All the kids come through and they get the same born-on date. Boom, there you go. You're five, you're in kindergarten. Pays no attention to the individual child. It just says you're at a certain age, so therefore you're in with this other group of products that have the same born-on date. And you will be moved through this system. And we're not trying to create men of letters, as was originally described by the founder of this system. That's not the point. We're not trying to teach you to become scholars. We're trying to teach you how to get out of the fields and into the factories. Because that was the latest, greatest thing at the time. Oh, look at this. We got factories and automation. Oh, this is so exciting. Just because the model was built a long time ago, and it's the model we know and you know and have known for decades, doesn't mean it's still the best model, and it doesn't mean it was even the best model when it got built, right? So I understand all of that is to say that I understand why, you know, going back and thinking through in terms of like, well, is it just because people are, you know, deriving some benefit from a particular program or status quo? Maybe, but in some cases, it's an inability to fathom any other way.
All right. Do the current world events have you wondering whether we are teetering on the edge of catastrophe? Are you concerned it's going to reach our shores? Okay. So what are you doing about your concerns? Let me help. Carolina Readiness Supply at CarolinaReadiness.com. Whether you're looking to expand your emergency preparedness supplies or you have no idea where to even begin, Carolina Readiness Supply can help you. Food, water purifiers, tools, first aid kits, instructional materials, camping and hiking supplies even, because being prepared is just smart. Carolina Readiness Supply has 2,000 square feet of supplies and educational materials that you'll need for any kind of emergency. In Waynesville and always at CarolinaReadiness.com, veteran-owned Carolina Readiness Supply. Will you be ready when the lights go out?
An email from Jason
He says, Pete, I would have more sympathy for Byron Donalds if he didn't attack Ron DeSantis for the exact same thing concerning the Florida school curriculum. That's fair. That is fair. Politico with the headline, Byron Donalds expresses nostalgia for the Jim Crow era when the black family was together. He's not expressing nostalgia for the Jim Crow era. That's not what he said. It's not what he did. He said during Jim Crow, the black family was together. More black people were not just more conservative, because black people have always been more conservative minded, but more black people voted conservatively. He went on to say, where is it? Oh, that was it. This is the quote from Hakeem Jeffries. Hang on. I'll get to him in a second. It was at an event, Congress, Cognac, and Cigars. It's part of an effort at Black Outreach, Black Americans for Trump Initiative. And this was held in Philadelphia, although he is from Florida. And he says, the reason why the Democrats have a hold on the black community is because our parents, parents, parents keep telling us, you got to vote Democrat. It is up to us in this generation to say, well, why? That was actually Wesley Hunt, I believe, also a black conservative from Texas. And Donald said he's starting to see the reinvigoration of the black family, which he described as younger people forming nuclear family units and helping to breathe the revival of a black middle class in America. He went on to say that those family values had previously been eroded by Democratic policies that black voters embraced after becoming loyal to the party due to the civil rights movement. Right. And as I mentioned a couple times with Joe, who called in last hour, that the same impact is felt among all racial demographics. These policies are destructive to all races. So this isn't anything specific to African Americans. It's specific to people, right? This is what has occurred because of these types of government programs. House Minority Leader Hakeem Jeffries, Democrat, said, quote, it has come to my attention that a so-called leader has made the factually inaccurate statement that black folks were better off during Jim Crow. That is a factually inaccurate statement. And it's also a factually inaccurate statement of yours, because that's not what Byron Donalds or Wesley Hunt said. Jeffries went on to say, quote, how dare you make such an ignorant observation? Well, he didn't, so there's that. He says, quote, you better check yourself before you wreck yourself. Are we still saying that? Is that still a thing? I don't really. Lame. I mean, really, dude, that's not even dad joke, because dad jokes at least sometimes get you an eye roll or a smirk, like, because there's an admission that, oh, I see what you did there was a play on words or something like that. But this is just like, ugh, you know, you better check yourself before you wreck yourself. Polling suggests larger shares of black voters are winnable for the GOP this cycle. A recent New York Times, Siena College, Philadelphia Inquirer poll of five key swing states found more than 20% of black voters in swing states are open to voting for the presumptive Republican nominee in the fall. And that, my friends, is the real problem. That's what they're genuinely concerned about. It's not Byron Donald's comment. That's just an opportunity to pounce or to see. Sorry. Hang on. No, Democrats don't do that. Only Republicans pounce or seize. Sorry, my bad. It's only, right, his comment is just an opportunity to then attack Republicans and say, if you're black, you can't vote for them. To quote Joe Biden, they're going to put y'all back in chains. It's the same message, right, just with some different words. Same message. Try to scare people into not voting for this party. Look at them. They're saying Jim Crow, that's nostalgia. He's nostalgic for the Jim Crow era. He's not, actually. He's highlighting one of the things that the black community enjoyed, which was strong nuclear families.
to this day, families are such a key part of the community. But, you know, there's an election to be won. So let's go ahead with the race division and such. Oh, speaking of fireworks, some guy tried to blow up a Lamborghini with some. All right, so what's more American than celebrating July 4th by shooting fireworks at a $300,000 Italian supercar from a helicopter? I'm not sure, actually. All right, so there is an online influencer named Suk Min Choi, a.k.a. Alex. He's now facing up to 10 years in prison over a crazy, stupid stunt from 2023 that he carried out partially on federal land, thoroughly hacking off the FAA, the DOT Inspector General's Office, the Bureau of Land Management, ATF. Yeah, a whole bunch of people. They're very, very angry with him. All right, so the video actually doesn't just include the helicopter shooting fireworks at the Lamborghini. No, also, it's got a whole bunch of behind-the-scenes conversations about how they're going to do it and what happened and all that. Or, as the prosecution might call it, evidence. That was part of the uploaded video. Yeah, all right. I'm in for Brett Winterbull, so I got another hour. Otherwise, I'll see you next week. Don't break anything while I'm gone. All right, that'll do it for this episode. Thank you so much for listening. I could not do the show without your support and the support of the businesses that advertise on the podcast. So if you'd like, please support them too and tell them you heard it here. You can also become a patron at my Patreon page or go to thepetecallinershow.com. Again, thank you so much for listening, and don't break anything while I'm gone.